That's the late Sir Roland Hanna on piano opening Ron Carter's Blues in the Closet. Ron Carter, of course, is on bass. Joe Locke on vibes. Sir Roland Hanna, as I said, is on piano. Lenny White on drums and Benny Golson on tenor sax. It's from Ron Carter's 2001 album, Stardust. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and we're talking about something that's been in the closet for quite a while now and needs to come out. It's in Hillary Clinton's closet. Years before she declared her candidacy for president, Hillary Clinton's health was of concern to her family and those in her inner circle. She had had several major health setbacks and experienced symptoms of serious medical conditions, including sudden falls, concussions from those falls, potentially fatal blood clots, sustained double vision, frequent fainting, coughing fits, seizures, hypothyroidism. They were all, in a short span of time, a few years, experienced by her. Team Clinton, however, only when the media insisted on an answer would say that Clinton was improving and looking forward to being back to her good old self soon. Clinton's dramatic and alarming exit last month from the 9/11 commemoration in Lower Manhattan, ostensibly due to dehydration and then later to pneumonia, brought out in the open long-standing concerns about her health that had been stuffed in the political expediency closet, lest they give life to questions about her medical fitness to rule. Several in the medical field have been raising questions about Clinton's health, pointing generally beyond physiological issues and more toward neurological effects of the known health setbacks that she has had. And these setbacks, they say, could affect her brain function, including her ability to think and reason, her memory capacity, her ability to make sound judgments, etc. Such findings will disqualify a presidential candidate from holding office. And so we have had no real deep examination of what is the state of Hillary Clinton's health, although we see more and more instances in which she is just not looking right or not functioning right. We have as our guest today Dr. Ted Noel, who has spent 32 years working in critical care and anesthesia and 10 years as the medical director of a surgical center. Independently, He has been producing a series on VidZette, VidZette.com, on what he says is evidence that Hillary Clinton is suffering with neurological problems, displaying symptoms very often seen, he says, in people with Parkinson's disease. And Dr. Noel, I am so delighted that you could join us today.
It is so good to be with you.
Thank you. I have been following the series that you have been doing, and what you have been doing is running video, essentially, and you point out symptoms, and they are undeniable. We see what you're talking about. We actually see the footage. And we hear the commentary, the narrative that accompanies the footage from your perspective.
Yes.
But you already have begun to get a lot of flack, both within the medical field and outside of it, saying that, you know, what do you know? What are you talking about? You're an anesthesiologist. You know, what could you possibly know, and how could you possibly know definitively that Hillary Clinton is suffering from is displaying the same symptoms that very often is seen in people with Parkinson's disease?
Well, first of all, you've got to look at my background. As an anesthesiologist, I'm the internal medicine doctor in the operating room. Trained in critical care medicine, I had to take care of the sickest patients with every disease known to man. But common to every physician is a basic foundation of knowledge. And when something is brought up, you can educate yourself and come up to speed. Then as the circumstances have developed, I've had a number of other physicians talk to me and say, yes, you're on target. Now, I've had some who disagree, no question, but I've had others who have just flat said, you nailed it, including a neuropsychiatrist who specializes in Parkinson's disease and helped me write one of the documents on my site.
Well, this brings to light a very obvious question, and that is, why isn't this more openly discussed? Why is it that, and you have been contending, that the symptoms have been there for quite some time?
Let me change a word. You're talking symptoms. Signs are what you and I see. Symptoms are what she feels.
Okay.
It's been there for quite a while. And one of the things is that Parkinson's disease can be a very long-lasting disease. There are people who've had it for 50 years, so it's not something that gets you quickly. And it progresses at different rates. And she may have seen small signs early on, or small symptoms to her early on, but with medication could hide them. And it's only been recently that they've been getting more and more frequent.
What emerges for you as the point beyond which you had no doubt?
Well, it's actually several steps of what went on. In 2013, when she had that "What difference does it matter, does it make" episode in front of Congress, my brother, who had been a Parkinson's caregiver for years, a trained nurse who worked in a skilled nursing facility for Parkinson's, said, "That's a Parkinson's disease rage." He'd seen it dozens of times, and I brushed him off. Then the videos circulated, "Oh, she's having a seizure," and we had that head nodding episode with the cold chai. Then at the balloon drop at the convention, you have this what turns out to be an oculogyric crisis where her head goes way back, mouth open, eyes bug-eyed. You start looking at those and you go, wait a minute, what's going on? And I start discussing this with people who've been talking Parkinson's, and it turns out that what we're looking at there is toxic effects of medicines for Parkinson's. Then we start chasing back. You start seeing evidence of places where she's done other things. For example, the freezes. There's a rally where there's a disturbance in the audience and she just suddenly locks up. And this attendant comes up to her and talks to her, "It's okay, we're still here, keep talking," and rubs her back a bit. She kind of does nothing. He comes back and kind of coaches her out of it. That's a Parkinson's disease freeze. And so when you start seeing a number of these things, even though I'm not seeing the classic stuff, For example, you'll see people with this real bad tremor with in advanced Parkinson's disease. This is called a pill rolling tremor. She hasn't gotten that far. Medicines have been able to hide a lot of it, but a lot of the things that the big stuff may have been suppressed with medicines, but there's enough that keeps coming through that you say, there's something real happening. And there are about 9 diseases that you think about that are possible. And the big three here would be Parkinson's disease, progressive supranuclear palsy, and multiple sclerosis. Well, Parkinson's disease fits what we see a whole lot better than the other two. PSP is very quick, very rapid downhill course, and multiple sclerosis from Tuesday to Wednesday will look completely different. What we're seeing is a very consistent picture.
What is it about what you're seeing that particularly disturbs you?
Oh, good heavens. There's so many things I could pick on. But if you look at what's going on, in every public appearance, she crosses her eyes. And it's an involuntary crossing. And basically, it happens more to the right, where she will look to the right. And the left eye, instead of tracking with it, will track too far. And their left pupil will bury itself here in what's called the medial canthus. It'll just get all the way under, and then it comes back to where it should be. Or she'll get all the way under, she'll blink, and now her eyes are back in convergence. This is a sign called loss of vergence, and it's a toxic effect from levodopa. And that's in every appearance.
And levodopa is the medication that is usually administered. Why?
It's the main... Parkinson's disease comes from a degeneration of a part of the brain called the substantia nigra. And the substantia nigra, it's one of the coordination centers, it makes primarily dopamine, which transmits certain kinds of signals in the brain to other areas in the coordination centers. As it degenerates, less and less dopamine gets to these places. So levodopa you take by mouth, and then the body picks it up and converts it in the brain to dopamine. So now you replace the dopamine. The problem is it's not a silver bullet going directly where you want it. It goes everywhere. And after, yes, it fixes the problem we've got, but in order to fix it, it also does things in other places. And it's the only real medicine we have, and it treats the signs and symptoms. It treats the physical movements. It doesn't do anything for the progress of the disease. We don't have any treatment to slow down the disease. If you have high blood pressure, we can give you medicine, we can knock your blood pressure down, and it doesn't get worse to speak of. It goes and goes, and it, you know, you now have controlled high blood pressure. It's not a problem. Parkinson's isn't like that. It just keeps going, and as it goes downhill, the person with Parkinson's disease descends into his own private hell. It's horrible.
Wow. But we have seen the eye crossing happen so frequently that, in fact, it became, I would say, a kind of cruel joke.
Yes.
People on Saturday Night Live and other programs and on the internet, this has been made fun of without people understanding that they're witnessing something that should really get much closer attention.
Oh, yes.
Did you find it odd that in the medical community, with the evidence right before them, we haven't had as much of a public commentary as you have been providing about this?
Well, the fact that I'm retired insulates me from what they're afraid of. The medical community that are actively practicing are really afraid of CMS. That's the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. CMS administers all of Medicare, and if you try to look at all the rules for Medicare, it would fill a room. It's insane. And if they decide they want to come to your practice and audit your practice, they will find something where you broke a rule. Guaranteed. You can't follow all the rules. They'll find something. And now, it's not just that, oh, that patient, you broke that rule, you owe us $100. It's, well, now we believe that you've got this massive fraud in your office, and literally they can take everything that you earned for years. It's much worse than any penalty the IRS would make for non-payment of taxes. And so any doctor who's in practice is absolutely petrified of this. I was in an 85-doctor practice, and the stuff that we went through to make sure that we followed all of the rules was insane. And it was because we're a big practice, we had a bullseye on our back, and we took every precaution to make sure that everything we did was strictly according to the rules.
Well, the criticism specifically as it relates to you is that you are not her consulting physician.
True.
She is not your patient. And therefore, it is quite a stretch that you're making to come to conclusions about a patient who is not your patient and with whom you have no ongoing history.
Absolutely fair question. And the problem is this. She is a public figure asking for us to put her in a position of public trust, yet she displays signs that are obvious to all, as you've said from the videos, that something is rotten in Denmark. Yet she denies everything. This is a valid level of direction of inquiry. I cannot say she has Parkinson's and pound the table, that's her diagnosis. What I can say is that the evidence strongly points that direction. And it points strongly enough that she really needs to have a come to Jesus meeting with the press and say, here are my real medical records, not just a letter from Lisa Bardak. And incidentally, you realize her name is a bad joke. Bardak in Russian means a mess. Hey, what can I say? It's just one of those cruel jokes that happens.
All right, let's get to what I would consider to be a major point in this whole discussion about Hillary Clinton's health, and that was at the 9/11 memorial, where she arrives looking okay.
Mm-hmm.
Although reporters did see what appeared to be a medical setup just in case something should go wrong, but they didn't make that they didn't note that as part of their reports. But afterwards, people reported that mm-hmm. there was some evidence of a medical setup just in case it might be needed. So supposedly it was a balmy day. It was
78, 79 degrees.
Very nice temperature. But supposedly she developed this overheating that caused her to fall out. And she literally had to be assisted to the van that she travels with, which, by the way, people said they saw a setup that suggested there was medical equipment in the van as well. But she becomes rigid.
Yes.
Stiff as a board. She's rigid, stiff as a board. She's literally dragged into the van and thrown into the van, or hauled into the van like a sack of potatoes. And then they take off. But despite what looks like a medical emergency, she's not taken to a hospital. And there are several within minutes of where she was. She instead is ferried up to her daughter's apartment. And lo and behold, a couple of hours later, there's Hillary Clinton emerging from mm-hmm. her daughter's apartment building, looking chipper and bright, and everything is back to normal. But we know that that was a dramatic event. Could you explain what, from your point of view, the significance of that day and that event?
First of all, let me knock off a tinfoil hat. Every Secret Service entourage has medical equipment. They have trained medical people in every Secret Service protection detail. That's normal. Now, her entourages have included an ambulance on many occasions, which nobody else has ever done, but that's a separate question. What happened there was not what she advertised, and if she hadn't come out of her daughter's apartment, it would have been better for her. Let's start with she got dehydrated. Nonsense. Fluid and electrolyte balance is my specialty, okay? She arrived hydrated. That's a given. Now, in order to become dehydrated, you have to lose water. How can you lose water? Sweat? She didn't sweat. Vomit? She didn't vomit. Diarrhea? No brown stain. Bleeding somewhere? No blood. Urinary problems? No yellow stain. In other words, she didn't lose water. She was not dehydrated. End of story. Absolutely conclusive. So now, you look at it and you say, what's going on here? She is feeling not right for whatever reason, and she tells her team, I got to get out of here. Okay? She goes to the exfil point, and the Scooby van's not there. Now, that's a failure on Secret Service part. They are supposed to have the van waiting for the protectee. They blew that one, and I'm sure some people got chewed for it. But when she arrives, she hits one of those classic things that Parkinson's disease people have problems with. Freezes are a circumstance where the brain is met with something that it can't process. And so essentially what happens is the brain goes into a reboot cycle and simply locks down. And it locks the entire body. As one Parkinson's family member described it, when my Aunt B freezes, if you were going to bend her leg, you'd have to break it. That's how rigid they get. In any case, she's walking through the crowd, suddenly sees the street. It's a visual change, and that's a classic to set off a freeze. She freezes. They lean her against the bollard, and they steady her side to side. You see the lady on her left. She starts to tip just a smidge right, and the lady pulls her back and holds her steady. When the van pops up, then they try to move her, and she won't bend anywhere. She goes up, back down, and then they just manhandle her like a log into the van. That's a Parkinson's disease freeze. It's classic. It's almost impossible to do with any other disease. Now, when she goes to her daughter's apartment, here's the other thing. Parkinson's disease freezes. Remember, you're met with something you can't process. You lock down, your brain reboots. Typically recover in a minute, sometimes less. The one at the rally probably took 30 seconds. In any case, once you recover, it takes you a moment to kind of regain your bearings. And she was reported to have been awake and alert in the van. So now she's recovered. What do they do? She pops a pill of levodopa, which you know will give you full effect within 45 minutes. What do? They get to the apartment, and 90 minutes after the event, she's out all happy and cheery. It fits perfectly. Let's add one more piece. She's wearing those brilliant blue sunglasses. And the people on Parkinson's disease forums spotted them. They said these are Zeiss Z1 F133 blue sunglasses. And they are used to help treat major movement disorders. It turns out that your brain is this big computer, and if you're having these crazy movements that come along because of something bad coming out of the computer, if you change what goes in, and it turns out you change it a particular way with the blue glasses, what comes out now works. And some of those big movements go away. Look at the crowd. Nobody else had sunglasses.
Well, the diagnosis was initially that she was dehydrated. At least this was the report that we got, the official report.
Which is simply not true.
Not true. Okay. And then we have the report from Dr. Bardak. And it's really interesting. I'm working on the logistics here. It takes only a couple of minutes from the World Trade Center site to where Chelsea Clinton lives.
Right.
And unless Dr. Bardak was on site there, I don't know how she was able to tend to Hillary Clinton personally.
Bardak's office is in Mount Kisco, and MapQuest says it takes, in good traffic, I think 53 minutes to get there.
Okay, so that poses an interesting question. Was Dr. Bardak already at Chelsea Clinton as a backup in case anything should happen?
Hard to say.
How was it possible that she could make it from Mount Kisco to the apartment in such a short time? But in any event, her diagnosis was pneumonia.
Yeah, now that actually, remember this event, I believe, was on Sunday. And she talks about how on Friday she had had diagnostic studies and showed up with a right middle lobe pneumonia. It turns out that the most common cause of death in Parkinson's patients is aspiration pneumonia. The most common location for aspiration pneumonia is right middle lobe. And that has to do with the geometry of your airways. It's the way, if you were to pour water down your trachea when you're laying down, it would flow directly into the right middle lobe. And one of the things that happens with Parkinson's disease is that you develop a swallowing disorder. And that swallowing disorder in its early stages would lead to intractable coughing. Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm. It does. She's had these coughing fits, and they become quite pronounced lately.
Yes. Now, she's done pretty well with it lately. And, you know, in the last, say, 2 to 3 weeks. But again, if you're very careful about your timing on when you come out in public to make sure your medication levels are good, a lot of this stuff can be stage managed a little bit. And I have reason to believe that her team has been watching my videos to make sure, oh, he spotted that. Let's do what we can to keep that from happening again.
You have noted in the series all kinds of signals that there's something wrong neurologically. What are some of the things that you have noted, and why did you note them?
Well, the first ones were the head bobbing incident and the balloon drop incident. And going back to look at those, it turns out that in both of those incidents, which I had called Parkinson's disease levodopa-induced dyskinesia, remember dyskinesia means bad movement. If you look very carefully, you discover that she has eye crossing in both of those as well. And that's another PDLID. And Jacqueline Winterkorn, a neuro-ophthalmologist from New York, has presented a paper on this, pointing out that as Parkinson patients get on levodopa longer and longer, this is one of the dyskinesias that they commonly get. And when you look at eye muscles, or look at the eye movement is controlled by three cranial nerves. That is, they come directly from the control mechanism in the brain straight to the eye muscle. They do not go anywhere else. So if I had a nerve that wasn't working, let's say at all, let's say the sixth nerve in my left eye, that controls one muscle, the muscle that pulls this eye over to the left. My eye would track over to the right, and it would stay there. Same thing for a palsy involving any of the other muscle, any of the other nerves. If you've got the palsy, that nerve doesn't work, and the eye movement changes consistently all the time. But what we see with her is an on and off. It happens, it goes away. It happens, it goes away. And remember, I mentioned the fact that if she gets crossed and blinks, it comes back normal. That's called Wilson's sign. That is consistent in Parkinson's disease. And what you've got is an error in the control mechanism, because the nerves are working, because they work some of the time and then they don't work. And so you have an error in the control mechanism. And that error is the dyskinesia, and it happens because you're getting the levels too high. And let me just show you something here. This is a great hand computer generated chart. This is typical of how medicines are administered. You'll see you give a dose, it goes up, and then it comes back down. Now, with medicines like blood pressure medicine, we know how long they're going to last, so you can stack them on, and ultimately you end up with a straight line across here. Levodopa doesn't work that way, because there are a whole raft of things that affect how well it works. and how long it works. And so what happens is it may get shorter and shorter and shorter. And if you give a dose that gets into the treatment zone above this bottom line and stays below the side effect zone, which is above the top line, it'll go up and then it'll come down, and you can see it's a much shorter time inside between the lines than if I give a big dose that goes up here and goes down. I get much more time between the lines. The problem is I get time in that red hatched zone where I see side effects. And that's the problem. If you're going to give medicine to make sure that you get a period of time with solid treatment, and I want to guarantee that amount of time, I'm going to get another amount of time where I have side effects. And that eye crossing is a side effect they just can't avoid.
But interestingly, when the media have been covering Hillary Clinton and recorded those events when she has had the eye crossings, they've also edited these eye crossings.
There's been one of those that was particularly egregious. And that was on Hill Force One after the first debate. And there was a thing called a chroma key error. Basically, what happened is she had a dramatic eye crossing, and the camera crew on the plane said, we can't let that go out. And so they sat down, they captured a frame outside of the eye crossing and used it effectively as a green screen, you know, like your weatherman is actually in front of a green screen, in order to get rid of the eye crossing. Well, what happened is when they actually broadcast the video, you see this flash in her right eye, and then it's gone. But if you go frame by frame, you discover, oh, wait a minute, this isn't the original video. The signs behind her are doubled. She's got an extra bit of hair up here. There's a new smudge on a photographer's shirt, on and on. And I've had four video experts, I mean, these are people who do professional video editing, say this is a chroma key error. Somebody tried to do a quick and dirty while they were on the plane, and it didn't work.
We've been seeing some other symptoms, or you said they're not just symptoms, they are signs.
Signs.
We've seen other signs, for example, but they're not generally broadcast. But we see from independent people videos of Hillary Clinton requiring assistance up
yes.
and downstairs.
Yes.
Where she freezes and somebody has to kind of prod her mm-hmm. back into the mm-hmm. here and now. There was a scene where, as she was leaving a debate, she just stands there near the van. That,
right.
And mm-hmm. then somebody had to come and tell her, okay, we're ready to go now. And then she just suddenly, she gets a signal that she ought to move, and she moves.
We also go ahead.
So we're seeing many signals, but they are not being pursued as warranting further discussion or in any way a sign that her health is not what she portrays it to be.
She would have to make a public appearance and suddenly lock up where no one was close enough to help her and fall over for anybody to notice. You will recall the emails where New York Times is giving her campaign veto power over articles. You've got so much evidence that most of the media is basically doing everything they can to elect her. And, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, you've got people who don't want to tell the story. How do you get them to tell the story? I don't know. And again, the problem is not that she has funny movement problems. It's what happens to her mind as a result of what's going on. Because this is a neuropsychiatric disease. It is not just a neurological disease.
Well, we have had a history of presidents who functioned quite well despite their physical disabilities.
And if it was only a physical disability, that would be fine.
So see, now get us into this area of the neuropsychiatric impact that you think that she's is dealing with here.
Yeah, well, let's take the two presidents who are obvious. JFK had Addison's disease. That's an adrenal disease that affects salt and water metabolism. You give him the right steroids, it corrects it, he's fine. It doesn't affect his thinking. FDR had either polio or Guillain-Barré syndrome, both of which cause paralysis. They don't affect your thinking. See, and that's the issue. Parkinson's disease affects your thinking. Every Parkinson's sufferer goes through on and off states on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times a day. You know, and this is how they live. And when they hit the off state, they cannot make decisions. Period. It's not that the 3 a.m. phone call would go to voicemail. It's that they wouldn't be able to decide to pick up the phone. And if someone were to get them out of bed during the off state to say, we got a problem, it would be blank stare time because they can't handle the decision. They can't process the information. It's essentially like your brain is running, well, it's like a tire in mud. You spin one tire, the other one sits still unless you've got positive traction. You go nowhere. And this happens on a daily basis. That's without the psychosis, or we should say without the other problems that come along. A large number of Parkinson's sufferers get a dementia. Now, we're all familiar with Alzheimer's where people can't remember their friends. But this is different. You have the memories, but you have trouble putting them together to make them work. And a large number, I've had one authority write me say it's actually 95%, get dementia, where they can't put two and two together to get four. They just can't work the mind to make the decisions. And, I mean, this is a crucial problem. You've got to have a president who is able, I mean, regardless of your political leanings, you've got to have a president who's able to answer the call 24/7.
Well, it appears that these conditions that Hillary Clinton has been living with are not at all unknown to the Obama administration. It was recently revealed that President Obama himself saw to it that an appointment was made at Walter Reed Hospital for Hillary Clinton to be thoroughly examined because he was so concerned about her health. And, of course, she did not go there to get the medical attention that she needed. So this means that it is known that she is coping with something that could imperil, just as you said, her judgment, her capacity, her memory capacity, her ability to make sound decisions, and so forth. And yet nothing is being said. So do we have here the makings of a major conspiracy to essentially subvert the democratic process? If you know that there is somebody who has a very good chance of being the next president of the United States, and you know that that means the whole package is coming with it, including this long list of neurological and probably psychiatric issues as well, it is part of your duty, it would seem, to make sure that that person is not elected, or that person basically goes through a very thorough examination, and experts make the determination as to whether that person is fit for, as Donald Trump likes to say, fit to rule.
Yes, I would agree. But you see, now you're asking a question really that goes to where is the journalism? What has happened to it? And when you have journalism has ceased to become, you know, journalism used to be report the news. What happened? Journalism has become make the news. You see, the conversation we're having is what is the news? But if we have a conversation that is, okay, let's just pick her opponent. In Gettysburg, he gives a big address where he has a whole lot of policy stuff. And then at the end, he says, I'm going to sue the women.
This is Donald Trump.
Yeah, Donald Trump. How much of the policy got covered? Nothing. All that got covered was, I'm going to sue the women. Okay? Now, is that journalism? There's a real question there. And when people, there is an expression that comes from the Bible that people become willfully ignorant. And this is really one of those things where people see Hillary Clinton as the embodiment of whatever their personal goals and dreams are. And they don't see anything else. So I'm going to do everything for my personal goals and dreams. And I'm not willing to see anything else.
Could Hillary Clinton be forced to be examined?
Legally, no. The only way you're really going to force it is if you get a significant amount of media coverage that really pounds it. And that's a difficult proposition at this point.
Wow. So the likelihood is that this information that we're sharing today is likely just going to be a topic for discussion and perhaps nothing more. It certainly will not have the intended impact of causing people to understand that this is also an alarm, mm-hmm. that there's something major going on here that could imperil the entire nation, irrespective of what your political views are.
Exactly. Let's go back to Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson had a stroke about a year and a half before the end of his term. During that year and a half, there were only two people who saw him on any regular basis, his wife and his doctor. We have to ask, who was the acting president during that time? I suspect it was his wife.
And for Hillary?
That would be William Jefferson Clinton.
It certainly would be. It's a twofer.
Maybe.
It's a twofer. You get it?
Well, yeah, I remember that from a while back, yes.
Here's a question about the obligation of the medical community. As part of its obligation, it would seem to be in the public interest, it seems as if there should be some kind of a formal statement or a formal concern that puts the entire nation on notice that there is reason to believe that there's something wrong here. And
Drew Pinsky made some comments. We have some comments from others. The Association of American Physicians and Surgeons did a poll where they found a vast majority of docs said there's something big going on. And they are presently running a poll where they have their members look at the video of her on the plane leaving the third debate, where there are two really dramatic eye-crossing episodes. And then the question is, does she have something wrong? Second question, is it neurologic? And then some follow-ups. And that's in its second day, and hopefully within a day or two, it'll be large enough poll that they will release it, and hopefully somebody in the news will say, oh, there's a bunch of docs think it's real. The real problem, though, like I said, is if you are at risk for your entire livelihood by speaking out, are you going to speak out? I'll give you one example from AAPS. Remember I told you about Medicare fraud. There is a psychiatrist who served prison time for Medicare fraud for undercharging Medicare. Okay? That's how evil they can be. And this is the problem. When you have a large government, ultimately many corners of that government take on their own life, and they cease to serve the people.
Well, let's focus a little bit on the person who might, if it came to it, might have to answer that phone at 3:00 in the morning.
Right.
And that's Bill Clinton. He too is showing some very discomforting signals. I see tremors. in yes. his hands. His voice is very raspy. He physically doesn't look good. What do you think is going on with him?
I really haven't focused on him, although I've seen a couple of videos. He might have Parkinson's. That's been a suggestion. The tremors I've seen in his hands are suggestive of a pill rolling tremor, which is pathognomonic for Parkinson's. By the way, that big word means it only happens there. So it's possible, but I would suspect that the Democratic establishment would look at it, and if she started having problems, Tim Kaine would take over.
But even with Hillary Clinton, I mean, Jill Stein is a physician. One would think that this would be something that would be raised. But you're not getting that signal from the Green Party either, or people who should be raising these things as a way of saying, listen, we are about to make a huge mistake, and we really need to rethink this. There are people who are questioning. Trump is questioning it, but he's also being pretty soft with it and in the guise of saying, well, her stamina. He's concerned about her stamina and her fitness and whatnot. But nobody's saying we have to have a definitive ruling. There's got to be a way from a political perspective that some entity will compel a candidate to submit to a medical test. Or a battery of medical tests.
There is no legal structure for that. The only body that could do that would be the Democrat National Committee, and they're not interested.
No.
I mean, when you look at her campaign staff, their emails clearly show that they think there's something wrong with her head. I mean, you've got, well, we're worried about her headspace right now. We're worried about her biological clock. Is she on the same planet we're on? You know, those kinds of things in their emails make it very clear they're worried about her head. But is anybody listening? Are they even concerned with what they're seeing? Or are they more concerned with being close to where the deals are made because it benefits them? I mean, you think about it. I would make the argument that the Clintons are Frank Underwood from Netflix. You know, now that's a political argument. But they are the quintessential deal makers. And how do you get the most opportunity to make deals? You end up in the White House. I mean, that's what Frank Underwood did. It's the professional politician, that's a term James Q. Wilson coined, is the one who wants to be where the deals are made. He's unconcerned with the content of the deals. And as a matter of fact, if you put principles and ideals into the deal, it may get in the way and prevent the deal. He just wants the deal. And I think on both sides of the aisle, the vast majority are in that mode.
Wow. So what do you think is in the immediate future health-wise for Hillary Clinton?
In the immediate future, we're going to see repetitive on-off cycles. That cannot go away. That means she cannot, and typically, if she has more than two or three appointments in a day, she's run out the clock for the day. She is not going to be able, let's assume she's elected, she's not going to be able to keep the full schedule a president normally keeps. And she's not going to be able to make as many appearances as a president might normally keep. So you end up with someone who's going to be largely a recluse, much the way she's behaving now. That's the only way she can survive.
It is true that for the campaign season winding down, when you expect activities to wind up, Hillary okay. Clinton has been unaccounted for pretty long stretches of time.
Right.
And it has been explained that she's just preparing for the next debate, or she is, getting her act together.
Oh,
but in fact, it suggests that she has been unable to function.
Right.
And she's basically tuckered out. And a lot of preparation is required for any public event that she's to participate in, just to make sure that, you know, everything is okay. She's even, the meds are kicking in. She's stabilized and she will look normal. And immediately afterwards, she will disappear for a little while to just have the body readjust. You've explained this as a holiday, a medication holiday.
Drug holiday, yes.
How does that work?
Okay, the basic idea here is as you take levodopa, you get a certain amount of time that it works. And as you continue to take it frequently, that time will get shorter and shorter and shorter, and your side effects will go up. And if you take a day off where you don't take any medicine, you go hide, let the tremors show, then you start the medicine again, the medicine will last longer again, and the side effects go down. And, you know, this is one way to look good on stage because you're able to tailor things properly. You know, other things you do to look good on stage, the light on her podium fills under her chin to hide wrinkles. And then we've learned that the camera that was focused on her in the third debate had an amber filter in it to make her look more angelic and healthy compared to Donald. So there's a lot going on to make her look good. But the drug holiday allows her to last well, but not necessarily as long as she might. And at the Al Smith dinner, she took a pill about 20 minutes before she got up to speak. Then afterwards, when she got down in the crowd, she had horrible eye crossing. I mean, just massive eye crossing. And so she took the pill so she wouldn't show most things. But as time went on, the side effects popped in. And, you know, there's a real problem also with the drug holiday. It's dangerous. There's a problem called the neuroleptic malignant syndrome, where actually she can get a fever that can't be treated that can kill her. So in order to say, I'm going to take this drug holiday, one, I've got to have close medical supervision, and two, I've got to have a really high risk tolerance. And one of the things we know about Parkinson's patients is that they tend to be impulsive.
Is there no way that citizens, just ordinary citizens, who having access to information such as the information you are providing and sharing, can take some kind of action, a preemptive effort to stop this person from being elected, unless first that person is cleared of all the things that we've been talking about that may and very well likely could impact the ability to be an effective president? Is there some way that that could happen?
Well, as a practical matter, the only way they can do anything there is to vote for Donald Trump. Because as a practical matter, this is a binary election. Jill Stein and Gary Johnson are relative non-factors. And so what you would say is, I vote for Donald Trump because I can't afford to have a president who can't do the job. Forget about the politics. Going forward, then you have to get enough people stirred up about this problem that you start to say, okay, what are we going to do? You either by statute do something or a constitutional amendment. Now, if I've got a whole bunch of politicians who are happy to be deal makers, why are they going to pass a statute like that? You know, it's a high hurdle. And they got to have motivation, and then somebody on the other side might filibuster. You could see all the hurdles in that. And a constitutional amendment's even harder. So it's a difficult proposition. I would only hope that somehow the parties make that sort of thing part of their policy. That would be more likely, but even that's not very likely.
Regarding your series, I imagine are continuing to do this. How do people get to appreciate what you have done so far?
Well, there's two ways they can get to it. They can go to YouTube and look up the videos, or the easier way is to go to vidzet.com, and they can just look, everything that I've done is listed there. And they can click to it. The videos actually reside on YouTube, but you'll watch them on the website.
And You are going to be following this poll by the physicians and what they
Absolutely.
Have to say. And hopefully we can call you again and find out what your thoughts are about that.
I'd be happy to chat with you again. You've been most gracious.
Oh, no. Same here with regard to you. I want to thank you so much because I have been following this for quite a while now. And I am amazed at the way you present the information. It's a teach-in, actually.
And well, I'm a teacher by trade, too, at church.
Oh, really? So, you know, you not only state the facts, but you say, here is how it manifests itself. And these are the reasons that I have come to these conclusions. Do you accept the possibility that you might be wrong?
Absolutely. And I posted a video that says how to prove me wrong. And in it, basically, I say, give me a better answer for the things we see.
Well, I want to thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Dr. Noel, for being with us today, sharing your time with us. And I want to thank you for the thoroughness of your research and for being so brave, as a matter of fact. And you just highlighted why all the more so it is to be appreciated, because so many in the field of medicine are being intimidated by a system that just will not allow the truth to be known. So I want to thank you so much for that and for being with us today.
And thank you.
And we're going to try and see if we can get you back just to take questions, because I do like people to have the opportunity to stretch out as much as possible and for the audience to have access directly to the source of information. So maybe at another time, we can also set up a Q&A just for the audience, if you have a mind to do so.
That would be fine. I'd love to.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. That brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it opened our eyes to some new angles about this race that haven't really been at the center of attention. And, of course, we've just discussed the reasons why. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. We see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.